most flooring products. PureClean also cleans upholstery, tile, grout, and laminates, and they are a locally owned small business. PureClean services Chico, Orland, Willows, and The Ridge. Details, testimonials, and appointments at purecleanchico.com or at 530-715-1232. Peace and social justice is also made possible by DK Web Design, providing digital marketing services to improve your business's online presence, including websites, social media management, and search engine optimization. In 2012, owner Danielle Vogel started DK as a way to give back to the community by helping other organizations reach their full potential. Details to maximize your web presence are available at dkwebdesign.com and at 530-809-4989.
Welcome back to the Peace and Social Justice Program. The term humane hoax describes those current animal agriculture practices that are claimed to be, quote, humane. But rather than describing actual humane practices, these terms are merely marketing terms concocted by the animal agriculture industry to make us, the consumer, feel absolved from the violence, cruelty, and injustice inherent in raising animals for food. On February the 24th, 2024, the fifth annual Humane Hoax Conference was held, featuring presentations from experts and activists on the practices of greenwashing and animal agriculture humane washing. First up, we'll hear from Renee King Sonnen, the founder and executive director of Rowdy Girl Sanctuary, the first ever documented beef ranch conversion to 100% vegan sanctuary in the world. Renee King Sonnen's presentation is titled, There's No Right Way to Do the Wrong Thing.
It's such an honor to be here at the Humane Hoax Conference with all of you. Yes, I am from the big state of Texas. I always joke around and say, you know, Texas thinks it's its own country. The state itself really tries to have a bigger than life presence, especially when it comes to cattle ranchers. You know, my story started way back years and years and years ago on a Texas cattle ranch whenever I married my husband, Tommy, for the second time. And when I married Tommy, I moved to the ranch and had no idea that I was going to, you know, start seeing the animals and experiencing the lives of these animals as sentient and like my own cats and dogs. You know, one of the pivotal moments for me in realizing all of this as a cattle rancher's wife was when I moved to the ranch. You know, I it's like I got thrown into the center of what it really is like to be a cattle rancher. Because from the outside looking in, all those cows look pastoral. They look like they're living the good life. You know, if you just pass by them on a country rural road, you see them grazing, you see them with their babies, and you think, oh, isn't that beautiful? What you don't see is the humane washing that goes on behind the scenes of all of those animals that end up in sale barns, feedlots, and then slaughterhouses. I began to witness firsthand another pivotal moment with Rowdy Girl, and I began to witness firsthand how my relationship with Rowdy Girl was becoming just like my relationship with my cats and dogs. And so when I started falling in love with Rowdy Girl, I was met with so much resistance because it was like I was being forced to have a certain kind of relationship with her. Even though I was bottle feeding her, I was taking care of her. At the same time, I was being forced to realize that one day she was going to be leaving and going, you know, to auction. And I just couldn't stomach it. And so as I began to feed Rowdy Girl, I began to see all of the other animals in the pastures, and they began to speak to my soul. They didn't speak out loud, but they began to speak to my conscience. And it wasn't too long after that that I began to name them all. And if you don't know the story of Rowdy Girl, I recommend that you go to our website and just look at all the media stories that is out there, because our story's been told around the world and in multiple languages. And it's been on CBS Evening News and other outlets. But learn the whole story, because I'm going to skip forward in this story to the day I realized that I could no longer do the wrong thing. I tried so hard to do the wrong thing the right way. And as I was transitioning, I didn't know I was transitioning. I'm not one of those vegans that said, oh, I think I'm going to transition and go vegan. If you're a cattle rancher, you don't transition to go vegan. It's not typical. It's not even in your realm of reference to transition to go vegan, because your belief system is that you use the animals and commodify them because you're providing food for the country, right? And so when I began to change, I began to want to do things more humanely. And it was very interesting. I began to watch videos because I wanted to see what was happening to the calves we were sending to the sale barn. And every video I watched was not particularly humane, but I was trying to find one. I was trying to find the humane way to do the right thing or the wrong thing. And my husband kept telling me, Renee, quit watching all those videos. It's just Peter propaganda. And I mean, he told me that 1,000 times, that I was just, falling in the footsteps of Peter propaganda. I'll never forget that, because I didn't even really understand PETA or anything about animal rights or nothing until I started looking into PETA propaganda. And here I am, a cattle rancher's wife, trying to figure out how to buy my eggs humanely, buy my milk humanely, buy our meat humanely. And because I couldn't stand the idea of what was going on in them factory farms. And as I began to do my research, we started getting our milk from a local dairy. So the local dairy would bring us big old case of fresh milk straight from the farmer just up the road. And on top of the milk jugs was the name of the cow that the milk came from. Della, Susie, Moxie, Myrtle, whatever, the name of the cows. And I felt so comfortable, and justified knowing that when I poured that milk and drank it, I was drinking from a cow that was humanely treated. Wrong. As I began to do my research about where those cows came from and what happened to their babies, I was just gutted. Their babies were taken away from them. They were thrown in fields, and left to die. They were killed within minutes or a day or two of their birth. Or the females were put in the same situation as their mama to become a breeder stock to have more babies and to make milk. So, I began to see that there was something really wrong with what we were doing. And it was that type of motivation for me as a cattle rancher that began to see that there was something innately wrong. It felt evil. And yet we were conditioned to not only see it as righteous, but to believe with all of our hearts and souls that it was us. We were the ones feeding the world, and we were justified through religion, through education, through government, through all of it, through the media. We were justified. We were held up. We were propped up to feed these animals. So, and to sell them as profit. So when I began to have my awakening. I didn't know that on October 31st, 2014, I was going to go vegan. I happened to go vegan on Halloween. It wasn't planned, never. It's just that all of my research led up to a moment in time when I saw the Melanie Joy dissertation on carnism. And if you haven't seen Dr. Melanie Joy's dissertation, you know, and I just love her. We have become really good friends. I had the privilege and the honor of spending a whole week with her. And it was the most amazing time to sit and listen and learn from, you know, an expert like her, because it was her little documentary that spoke to my heart the day I went vegan. There's a whole family eating beef stew. Everybody's enjoying beef stew. And somebody at the table says, well, can you tell me what the recipe is? This is so good. And the lady of the house says, oh, I'm so glad you asked. You start off with a pound of very young golden retriever. So take a moment and take that in. At that moment, all the PETA propaganda, all the videos, all the stuff for years and years and years, it took years for me to go vegan. I didn't know I was going vegan, but it took years and years and years for me to get to this point on October 31st to where I was just like blown away with the fact that I could be eating a chopped up dead baby golden retriever and I wouldn't even know it. Because you don't know what's in that bowl. When you're eating beef stew, you don't know what that body flesh that's chopped up in little pieces really is. You're just buying a package of chopped up body parts and making stew out of it. And at that moment, that penetrated. It got in here and I was like, oh, I was jolted. I was jolted like I had never been before. And my husband said, Renee, come on, get ready. We got to go to my mom's. You know, when there was a big event that happened every Halloween, it was a block party for all the kids and their costumes, and all the in-laws and the outlaws and the family all got together to watch the kids parade down the block with all their costumes on. And we all sat out in the yard, you know, having our iced tea and, you know, having dinner and all that stuff. So anyway, we go to my mother-in-law's house. Her name was Effie, God rest her soul. And we walk in the door with all the kids playing, and my mother-in-law brings out a pot of beef stew. Hey, the universe could not have timed this any better. It's like my ears started ringing. I started seeing double, and I just knew I couldn't eat it. And I'd always eaten it before, and my mother-in-law brought it out, you know, so proud, and you could smell it all in the house. And she was like fixing to ladle me out a big old bowl, you know, and I was like, oh, no, I can't eat that. And everybody's there in the house. They're all talking. They're all playing. Everybody's doing all that. And then she said, well, why not, Renee? I said, because it's got floating dead hacked up animal bodies in it and I can't eat it. Oh my God. You would have thought I had kicked my mother in the face with my heel, my mother-in-law. And she said, well, Renee, what did you say? And I repeated myself, because it's got floating dead hacked up animal bodies in it. And everybody in the house got quiet. They looked at me and they were just like, their mouth was open, like, oh. And she said, well, Renee, you can pick it out. And I said, nope, there ain't no more picking it out. And at that moment, y'all, that was the moment I knew that there was no right way that I could eat beef stew or anything remotely resembling an animal. I immediately became my husband's worst nightmare and his greatest vision for the future, because I went into animal activist mode and I didn't even know I had it in me. I had no idea there was an animal activist inside of me waiting to be born. And at that moment on Halloween 2014, she came out of the closet and I began to do any and everything I could to be a voice for these cows. I ended up rescuing the whole herd from my husband, and I bought them all from him and started the first ever documented beef cattle ranch, you know, vegan conversion in the world that I know of. I mean, there's a lot that's happened since. There's been cattle ranchers. I mean, I know Howard Lyman transitioned before us, but he didn't transition his cattle operation into a vegan farm. He, in fact, was one of my greatest mentors early on. And, you know, one of the main struggles that we had transitioning our cattle ranch, you know, Tommy didn't go vegan right away. My husband went vegan, though, to his credit. I went vegan in October, and on May 2nd, 2015, he flipped the switch and went vegan. So he didn't wait too long. And from October to May, I was relentless. I would not let Tommy eat any animal products in the house because y'all, all I saw was death and suffering. I could not stand it. I realized that we could not, neither could he. I mean, I don't recommend that everybody do it the way I did it. I don't know if that's the right way or not. I just know that I personally could not stand the idea of animal products being in my home. Still, I won't allow it. I do not allow animal products in our home. I do not allow animal products at the sanctuary. And you can get fired down there, man. You bring, you know, understandably, if it's not on purpose and, you know, it's somebody that, you know, it's a mistake. But we don't do that. And our home, Tommy was really mad at me because I wouldn't let him eat his meat and his cheese and his eggs and his milk. You know, I'd throw it out and I'd say, no, we're not eating that here. And he would say, well, I live here too. And I was like, well, you may live here, but if you want to eat here, you're going to eat vegan. If you want to eat that stuff out there, that's on you. But you're going to eat in this house, you're going to eat vegan, because my soul cannot endure the suffering that I know those animals went through. Now, why didn't I feel that suffering and that pain before? Why didn't I recognize that animals suffered and died horrifically for me to eat? Conditioning, programming, indoctrination, education. We are force-fed violence, and it's normalized. Force-fed violence. There is no right way to consume, eat, breed, commodify violence. You can't do it. And before my husband went vegan, there was a film crew that came out. They wanted to tell our story. You know, we had not all the way funded yet. I was raising the money to buy my husband's cows. Tommy had gotten into a place where he was beginning to feel, you know, good about it. He saw that I was actually raising the money. He couldn't believe it. But I was raising the money, and you'll have to go back and listen to that story if you haven't heard it. It's quite colorful. I don't have time here to tell all of it. But when Tommy realized I was actually going to do it, he started kind of relaxing and getting into the rhythm of it. And he was like, wow, he never wanted to hurt the animals. He was like most traditional cattle ranchers. They're not cattle ranching because they want to hurt animals. They're cattle ranching because it's their way of life. It's their culture. It's their tradition. Their grandpa did it. Their great-grandpa, their great-great-grandpa. It's, you know, it's heritage. And that's what Tommy was doing. He didn't realize he was doing the wrong thing until I forced him to see it. And, you know, when he began to see it, between that time period, that film crew was coming in and they wanted to film us. Now, they weren't vegan. They were purportedly vegetarian. And they were all like, in fact, I signed a 5-year NDA. You know, I'm out of it now. I'm outside of it. I could tell you the names of these companies, but I'm not here. If y'all want to reach out to me individually, I'll share the story. But suffice it to say that two big companies were behind it. And they had all told the film producer, if we cooperate, that they were going to like give us all kind of money to just make our farm, you know, sparkle, come to life, new barns, new roads, new fences, you name it. It was like carte blanche. They came out and did a beautiful video of the red trailer. You know, you can go on my YouTube and you can see the red trailer song. And they filmed all this footage and they were making us all these promises. And then on May 2nd, 2015, we funded. I raised the money. I bought my husband's cows and it was crickets. I heard nothing else from these people. And I was so heartbroken. I was like, what happened? You know, we were brand new vegan, or I was. And Tommy went vegan on May 2nd, 2015, the day we actually funded. Tommy turned the corner. And I kept calling and calling and calling. And finally, I got a hold of her and she said, well, Renee, I just have to tell you, the reason why is because we chose another farm that decided to go humane. We were hoping and still hoping if you and your husband want to transition your farm to a humane meat farm, then we will still do the documentary. I was like, what? I couldn't even believe it. We were being set up by this film company. They were hoping that I wouldn't fund. They were hoping because my husband wasn't vegan yet, they could convince my husband with money, with prestige, with all the stuff, the bells and whistles, you know, to become a humane meat farmer. My husband was so mad. He was just turning vegan. He said, you tell them people to get, you know what? And I had never seen the kind of anger and violence and hurt all at once inside of me when I realized that we were set up. You know, these humane meat farms, quote unquote, are big business. And if they could have owned our story, imagine what kind of story would be out there right now, you know? And I just want to take a minute on that note. I want to take a minute to read a story to you. Once upon a time, there was a small family farm nestled in the heart of the countryside. The farm had been passed down through generations, and the family took great pride in their work, raising cattle and tending to the land. However, as time passed, the youngest member of the family, a compassionate and curious teenager, began to question the practices of the farm. She couldn't shake the feeling of unease every time she witnessed the separation of mother cows from their calves, or the solemn journey of animals to the slaughterhouse. Driven by a deep sense of empathy and a desire for change, the teenager embarked on a journey of exploration and discovery. She immersed herself in books, documentaries, and conversations with activists, learning about the realities of animal agriculture and the profound impact it had on both animals and the planet. As her understanding grew, so did her conviction to make a difference. With courage and determination, she approached her family with a radical proposal to transition the farm from raising cattle for meat to cultivating plant-based crops. At first, her suggestion was met with skepticism and resistance. The family had relied on cattle ranching for their livelihood for generations, and the idea of abandoning tradition was daunting. But the teenager persisted, sharing her vision of a farm rooted in compassion and sustainability. She introduced her family to the concept of veganic farming, a method of agriculture that eschews the use of animal products and emphasizes soil health and biodiversity. Slowly but surely, her family began to see the merit in her proposal. They recognized the ethical imperative to treat animals with kindness and respect, and the environmental necessity of transitioning to a plant-based diet. With renewed purpose and passion, the family embarked on a new chapter in their farming journey. They transformed their fields into thriving gardens, growing a diverse array of fruits, vegetables, and grains without the need for animal inputs. Word of their innovative approach spread far and wide, inspiring other farmers to reconsider their practices and consumers to make more conscious food choices. The farm became a beacon of hope and possibility, demonstrating that there is indeed a better way to steward the land and nourish our bodies without causing harm to animals. And so, the teenager's bold vision and unwavering commitment to compassion not only transformed her family's farm, but also sparked a ripple effect of positive change that reverberated throughout the community and beyond. Imagine that happening. It's got to happen. This is what has got to happen in our world if we are going to transition the consciousness of farmers. Because y'all, you know, we just got to be real clear. There's still over 90 billion animals being slaughtered around the world right now. You know, when you look at it from the top looking down, it ain't getting smaller. Animal ag is huge. And we have a government that does not give small farmers like the one I just talked about in that little story a chance. They don't give those farmers an option to transition their farms from animal ag into a plant-based farm or a veganic farm. There's no incentives. All the incentives are given to the big guys. Or the incentives are given to farmers, you know, like us, if we lose our animals, you know, to floods or fires. They just give you a bunch more animals and let you start all over again. But they don't say, hey, since you're in a environmental area that's prone to, you know, climate change, why don't we try something new? This is what's got to happen. This is what's got to happen if we are going to truly transition our planet. I'm on the board of directors of Agriculture Fairness Alliance. It's a 501c4 vegan-backed lobbying group. And that is what our mission is. But y'all, change is hard. Our government is full of tradition, culture, heritage that's steeped in animal agriculture for generations. The lobbyists in our government, the staffers, they're all part of the big act. So vegans out there, if you're looking for something to do to really make a difference, get involved, you know. Go to your local governments and become a staffer. Become a vegan lobbyist. Do whatever you got to get in the doors to make change. Because it ain't happening fast enough for us. You know, no matter how much food is being created, no matter how much vegan food, vegan change, animal ag is bigger. And we've got to become more organized and get bigger. So I hope my presentation to all of you about the fact that there is no right way to do the wrong thing made impact. I hope you out there will consider sharing the story, going on our website, sharing the story, you know, because it's stories that change people. It's stories like the one I just read. It's stories like Tommy and I, you know, transitioning from Texas cattle ranchers to a vegan farm. It's stories, you know, like that get attention and make people question. So I really, really appreciate everything. I know that change can happen. I know that it will happen, but it's going to happen when folks like us on this panel and those listening become bold and brave enough to get out front and tell the world that you live in that there is no right way to kill and eat an animal. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
That was Renee King Sonnen's presentation, There's No Right Way to Do the Wrong Thing, from the recent 5th Annual Humane Hoax Conference. To learn more about Renee and her work, visit rowdygirlsanctuary.org. We'll be back with Vasily Stanescu talking about animal agriculture, climate disruption, and greenwashing after these brief messages.
Peace and Social Justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Members First Credit Union, created by the community for the community. Members First is a member-owned, not-for-profit financial institution providing checking, savings, loans, and credit cards to residents of Butte, Glen, Shasta, and Tehama counties. For more information, visit m1cu.org. Peace and Social Justice is also made possible by the Chico Racquet Club, featuring 8 new pickleball courts, pickleball leagues, tournaments, lessons, and clinics. The Chico Racquet Club also has tennis and sand volleyball and offers the same programs for those two sports. For information about membership or a tour of the club, visit chicoracquetclub.com or call 530-895-1881.
Hi, Ray Lager here, underwriting director at KZFR. Since 1990, KZFR has been offering an alternative to commercial radio's endless commercials and corporate influences. Our mission is to enlighten, educate, entertain, and inform. By having your business or organization represented on the Zephyr, you will not only get your message in front of thousands of weekly listeners, but you'll also get to show your support for locally produced community-based programming. To learn about supporting community radio, please contact me at underwrite@kzfr.org or by calling or texting 530-520-4742, and let's see how KZFR can help you fulfill your mission.
If you enjoy this program, you can now go to kzfr.org on your desktop computer and tip this show.
Welcome back to the Peace and Social Justice program. I'm Robert Jones. Today we are listening to excerpts from the 5th Annual Humane Hoax Conference, held on February 24th, 2024. Next up, we'll hear from Vasily Stanescu. Vasily Stanescu is Associate Professor and Chair of Communication at Mercer College in Macon, Georgia. Here's Professor Vasily Stanescu with his presentation, Animal Agriculture, Climate Disruption, and Greenwashing.
So first, let's just take a look at some of these ads that are going around. This rhetoric that somehow meat is now sustainable is everywhere. So here is a recent ad from Nyman Ranch, talking about how they're having a positive impact on the environment, right? So the claim now is not only that meat is less bad or sustainable, but that it's even better to eat meat than to not. These ads are everywhere. Here's one from Chipotle. Here's a sustainable farming magazine about the way that regenerative farming is actually better for the environment than not doing animal ag at all. Here's a recent book on the topic. Here is an ad that was produced in Canada that we'll come back to later. This says that it is actually net beneficial to raise cows and that it is equivalent to getting rid of 3.62 million cars per year. Here is an ad that also recently happened in Canada from McDonald's, where they boldly claim, you can just read it, that all of the meat at McDonald's is now sustainably sourced, with a little asterisk. That asterisk is important. So the first half is the argument. Humane meat, so-called humane meat, is actually worse for the environment and it is worse for animals. Often we hear these arguments that while not perfect, at least it is on the way to achieving something important and helpful. While it might be great for them to be vegan, at least things are getting better by supporting humane meat. So this argument is simply untrue. Humane meat is worse in terms of climate change It is worse in terms of killing animals and loss of biodiversity. And regardless of the term that is used, humane, free range, regenerative, or what have you, it is a non-scalable fantasy. So let's go through some of this. So virtually all of the peer-reviewed data that has actually studied any form of free range, pasture-raised, grass-fed, etc., meat has all found not that it is better in terms of climate change, but actually that it is much, much worse. So, for example, Nathan Pietler conducted a study where he looked at grass-fed, pasture-fed beef and found that it did have a significant difference in terms of the GHG emissions, the greenhouse gas emissions. But what he found is that it was actually 50% worse than even CAFOs. So worse than even confined animal feeding operations. Likewise, in that same study, he considered if people switched to a vegan diet, that it would lead to 96% reduction in the greenhouse gas emissions of protein creation in the entire Western diet. So why was this the case? The reason is, one, it takes far longer for these animals to achieve what is called market weight, i.e. the weight that they killed these farmed animals. That extra time has serious impacts for the environment. One of the major ways that cattle produce greenhouse gas emissions is through both burps and flatulence. Methane is a particularly powerful greenhouse gas. So the longer these cows take to achieve this market weight, the more methane emissions that are occurring. And this is true regardless of the type of feed that they're eating. Likewise, most free-range animals still have to have some type of supplemental feed. That feed also has a greenhouse gas emission. The third reason is land use changes. Overall, the number one way in which farmed animals harm the environment is through land use changes. And the scale at which we raise animals currently, which is approximately 80 billion land animals raised, processed, and killed every single year, is completely unscalable. So even if we took every single animal that was in the confined animal feeding operations right now and just released them onto pasture, it would devastate the globe. In 2006, when we only raised and processed and killed only 55 billion land animals a year, it already consumed over a third of the ice-free surface of the entire planet. Animal agriculture already consumes over 80% of all of the land used by humans for any purpose whatsoever. So it is simply impossible to take 80 billion animals and raise them in any way whatsoever. And any transition to do so would be ecologically devastating. Additionally, I sometimes will have animal advocates say to me, well, sure, I'll concede that it might be worse in terms of greenhouse gas emissions. I mean, you have all the studies. But what I really care about are the animals, and at least they're suffering less. Well, first of all, that's not entirely true. Many of these so-called humane farms are not treating the animals significantly better or differently than CAFO system. I'll talk more about that in a second. Additionally, many of these animals' bodies have been bred, so they are in constant pain. So, for example, when you see these idyllic images of chickens happily plucking on the pasture, first of all, chickens don't actually want to be in pasture. They would like to be in trees. They also have been bred so that their breasts hurt their entire bodies because they're so disproportionately formed. So the longer they're alive, they're actually in constant chronic pain. But finally, in order to have this image of these animals out in pasture, all of the wild animals have to be ruthlessly caught and killed. They just indiscriminately use traps. They shoot them from helicopters. They poison them. And they joke about it being as though they were being killed with napalm. So anytime you see these images of this animal or that animal in pasture, what you're not being shown are all of the thousands of wild animals, foxes, bears, coyotes, eagles, hawks, that all have to be ruthlessly exterminated by animal ag and the federal government in order for any of these animals to be able to be out on pasture. This is not better. This is worse. It is worse for the environment. It is worse for the animals. It is worse for biodiversity. It is nothing that anyone who says that they are a vegan or an environmentalist should ever support. So the third part, as I mentioned before, is that all of this is a fantasy and never scalable. I have been critiquing humane meat for 20 years now, and in that time, the terminology has constantly changed. So at one time, people referred to it as locavorism, another time beyond organic, free-range, grass-fed, rotational grazing, pasture-raised, compassionate carnivore, regenerative farming. However, regardless of the terminology that is being used, there are no, zero, none peer-reviewed studies that have ever found that any of these systems is scalable to the number of animals that we raise and kill each year. There is just not enough land on the planet. So here you can see the exponential increase of the tons, millions of tons of animals that are continuously killed. Remember, in 2006, we raised, processed, and killed 55 billion land animals for food. So that is not including all the fish or sea life we're killing. That is not including all the animals that are killed for clothing or to test cosmetics or for entertainment, just for food. Currently, that number is estimated at 80 billion. We are on the path to 120 billion. So the other truth is in this 20 years, what we see is the identical farms just reclaim what they're doing. Joel Salatin is the most famous proponent of so-called local humane, whatever terminology you want to use. And what has happened is he has recalled his exact same farm all of the names I've mentioned. Originally, he referred to his farm as Beyond Organic, which actually meant nothing since organic is a legal term, and he did not match that legal term. Beyond Organic just meant not organic. He then claimed that his farm was a local-based farm. When that was debunked, he then referred to it in terms of free-range, pasture-raised, rotational grazing. Here, he is talking about it in terms of regenerative farming. However, the farm itself and the practices by which he has raised these animals have never changed. The only thing that has changed has been the marketing. So here is a TED talk of him where you will see he's talking about cows, carbon, and climate, claiming via regenerative farming that he is offsetting climate change. Here is an image where he and I were in a public debate together, and he admitted that he himself is a climate change denier and does not even believe that climate change is real. So my point is that as activists, we should not be tricked when people simply change the label of what they are doing. It is clear that Joel Salatin, who is a climate change denialist, is not engaging regenerative farming from any authentic desire to prevent climate change. What he is doing is continuously rebranding the identical farm to confuse people and to be able to still sell his product. Relatedly, while there are none, zero peer-reviewed studies that say any of these systems is scalable or help in terms of the environment, there are several studies that have looked at the way that farms actually work. So what will happen in almost all of these terms that I have mentioned is they will talk about a thought experiment. Imagine if this farm ran in this hypothetical way, then in fact, none of the farms actually do. And then based on this hypothetical, they will then claim that it might be sustainable. However, when actual academics look at how actual farms actually operate, the conclusion is overwhelmingly that they are never sustainable. So, for example, Joseph Poor at the University at Oxford did the largest study ever conducted on the way that food was raised and produced. He went to 40,000 farms in 119 countries, looking at 40 different food products on each of those farms. And the conclusion of the study is that there is no way to raise animals in a way that is sustainable, whether it is free range, humane, pasture raised, or otherwise. Likewise, he concluded that a vegan diet is the single best thing anyone can do for the environment, far more important than cutting down flights, far more important than buying an electric car. It is important to note that Joseph Poor was not a vegan when he started the study and became a vegan because of the research that he found. So, again, as activists, do not be tricked by hypotheticals. What matters is not an imagined way in which animals might be raised. What matters is how they are ever actually raised. And every study that studies how animals are ever actually raised finds out that there is no way for any of these terms to ever be actually sustainable. Another example, Terry Garnett, again at the University of Oxford, studied specifically just the case of regenerative farming, which is, I think, currently the most popular term that's now being used. And the conclusion she came to, I think, is so strong. If you'll humor me, I will just read it out loud. Quote, "We cannot escape the fact that if we are going to have a hope in hell of cutting our climate emissions, then we need to stop our consumption of animal products. And that holds whatever the animal type and whatever the system in which it's been produced." So, again, setting aside a theoretical made-up way of how animals might possibly be raised, and instead looking at every single way in which they are actually raised, the top researchers have all concluded that none of the current suggested systems are sustainable, and that what we actually need to do is stop the consumption of animal products. So that's the background. All of these terms of humane meat, free-range farming, pasture-raised, local, beyond organic, rotational grazing, etc., are not actually helpful for the environment, are actually worse for the environment, are actually worse for animals. However, 20 years ago, at least I could say that they were two different systems, that there was one set of farms that were doing humane farming, as flawed as that model was, and there was another system of CAFOs that were doing industrial farming, and that the two were in tension, that these so-called humane farms at least were critiquing or fighting against this larger system of industrial farming. I'm here today primarily to tell you that is no longer the case. They are now one system. Overwhelmingly, these so-called humane farms are owned, controlled, and marketed by the CAFOs. Additionally, the CAFO system itself of just normal, traditional feedlot meat is marketing itself as humane and green. This is not two systems, this is one system. Let's take a look at a few examples. The first example is Niman Ranch. You remember I started with that first ad. Niman Ranch is the largest producer of so-called humane meat in the world. So here is an image from their website, "Raised with Care. Our farmers and ranchers are passionate for the craft, dedicated to their animals, and have respect for the land." However, what this website does not make clear is that Bill Niman, who originally founded the company, and his wife, Nicolette Niman, were forced out by the shareholders of the company because they wanted to lower the standard of care of the animals and make more money. So Bill Niman now boycotts and will not endorse or eat any Niman Ranch meat because of the way the animals are being treated. In fact, Niman Ranch is now a wholly owned subsidiary of Purdue Farms, a CAFO system. So even though, no matter how long you look at the Niman Ranch website, there is nothing that will ever tell any consumer that it is just owned by Purdue Farms, it is. Purdue Farms clearly could care nothing about animals, does not care about climate change, and has only bought this company to treat the animals whatever is minimally necessary to get through whatever regulations exist for higher profit. It is niche marketing. It is just a way for the CAFO system to make more money. But it obviously, since it is owned by a CAFO, no amount of buying Nyman Ranch will ever put a CAFO out of business. The only thing will happen is that Purdue Farms will get even richer. A bit unsurprisingly, when you look at the sustainability section on Nyman Ranch's website now, what it says is virtually nothing at all. It does not mention climate change. It claims sustainability means the ability to sustainably keep making money. For Purdue-owned Nyman Ranch, verbiage aside, sustainability just means more profit. Relatedly, increasingly, factory farms, CAFOs, are attempting to sell the critique of themselves to consumers. So, to this day, Nyman Ranch criticizes the CAFO system, even though there is no Nyman Ranch and it is owned by the CAFO company. Companies are trying to sell their own critique to consumers, and consumers are falling for it and paying more money. Purdue Farms is not the only one to do this. So it is a cross-the-board industry move pushed by consultants. In my classes, for example, we will watch Dove ads, which claim to protest against sexism and beauty advertisements. Many of you may have seen some of these same ads. We will then watch ads by Axe Body Spray, which are the single most sexist and misogynist ads on television today, particularly in terms of beauty products. Then I will explain to my students, neither Dove nor Axe are companies. They're just brands. There is only one company, Unilever, which makes both of them. They are selling their own critique to consumers to make more money. Purdue Farms is far from alone in this same trend. Every single CAFO has their own humane meat brand now. This is Cargill. However, what I find so remarkable about pasture-crafted beef, it is no different than any CAFO beef. It is Cargill's own, exactly the same, feedlot-produced beef that they've simply rebranded and are remarketing. What they do is use one loophole, which is that in feedlots, the cattle spend some amount of time on pasture. This is true for all feedlot operations, and then are taken into the feedlots later to get fattened up. And they focus just on this brief amount of time that the cattle are on some pasture to claim that it is pasture crafted and to take these unregulated, legally non-enforceable terms from the humane farming movement, pasture raised, to just greenwash their own CAFO meat. It's the same industry. This is the one owned by Tyson, Nature Farms. Again, if you're the consumer looking at any of these products in the store, usually there's no way to tell that they're actually CAFOs, and they use all the same verbiage, or as close as they can legally, to any other type of free-range farmed meat. In many places, the farms will just be side-by-side now. So it'll be the CAFO system of totally confined feeding, and on the exact same land, right beside it, there'll be whatever is their version of the humane farming at whatever standard is minimally necessary to be able to market at a higher profit. But it is the same land, it is the same company, and it is obvious that the amount of care for any of the animals is non-existent. I mean, the same people are running a CAFO. It is just a way to confuse consumers, prevent regulation, suggest the industry is solving their own problems, and make more money. Perhaps the worst offender of all of this, of selling the critique to the consumer of the own company, is Chipotle. So as some of you may know, Chipotle created this scarecrow commercial where the scarecrow sees all the horrors that are happening in factory farms. Via this ad, Chipotle briefly became one of the most profitable food companies in the world. However, what Chipotle refused to tell consumers is that they use factory farm meat. 100% of their chicken are all factory farmed. The majority of their cows are factory farmed. The less than 50% that are not factory farmed are imported from Australia, and it is very debatable that this is in any way sustainable. The only animal that has a significant amount of so-called un-CAFOed meat. There are the pigs, the pork, which they source from Nyman Ranch, which, as we already discussed, is exclusively owned by Purdue Farms. So in other words, just to be clear, when they downloaded this game and virtually rescued an animal from a CAFO and brought it to live on a humane farm and won a free burrito, when they went and ate that burrito, they would then be eating meat from a factory farm. Chipotle just knowingly and willfully sells a critique of itself to the consumers. And they are completely willing to admit this. This is an article in the New York Times when they admitted that they were doing this and claimed that they were in a gray area. So they don't claim to be perfect, and they're in a gray area for selling factory farmed meat. The last thing that I will just end on, as was the beginning ad, which is just my current research, is the way that CAFOs are now going to universities and saying, hey, we will give you money to hire academics, but we will choose which academic you get, and they will have to report back to us like an employee to a boss in order to study the meat industry. And they are doing this in order to produce a host of ads to claim that CAFO-based meat is sustainable for the environment. That is the basis for this ad that I showed earlier, which is funded by the Canadian Beef Council, that talked about how cows are 3.2 million cars per year. And to be clear, they're talking about all meat produced in Canada, not just somehow pasture-raised, all of it. That loophole that some amount of CAFOs are raising on pasture. And they have a host of similar ads that make identical claims. So the final takeaway, it is now one industry. Thank you.
That was Professor Vasily Stanescu's presentation, Animal Agriculture, Climate Disruption, and Greenwashing, from the recent 5th Annual Humane Hoax Conference. To learn more about Vasily Stanescu and his work, visit the website of Mercer University at mercer.edu. And to learn more about the Humane Hoax Project, visit humanehoax.org. That's it for this week's edition of Peace and Social Justice. This episode was produced by me, Robert Jones. The opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, or underwriters. All the music heard on today's program was written and performed by and used with permission from my friend, Los Angeles-based guitarist and composer Jeff Miley. You can hear more of Jeff Miley's music at jeffmiley.com. Stay tuned for Playing Dead, which is coming right up. And remember, continue to seek peace while fighting systems of injustice wherever and whenever you can. Until next time, goodbye and take care.
Just about that time, a minute before 1 o'clock here on KCFR. My name's Ray Lager. I'll be your host today here on Playing Dead, Music of the Grateful Dead, every Friday afternoon from 1 to 3. Hey, Charlie, welcome to the show, buddy, out there on the East Coast. All right, let's thank our underwriters. Got a nice show for you. This is a little thank you for everyone's generous and timely donation during our spring pledge drive. It was a fun time. When I come back, I like to just lay it on thick. Got a great show, 5977, the day after.